Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, June 8, 2018, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And today we are reading from the Big Book. We're in the chapter How It Works on page 68, paragraph 4. Now about sex, reading through three full paragraphs, ending on page 69 with To Be Despised and Loathed. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Sherry K.B., the 12 Traditions, Leslie M. Reading the text today and being of important support is Chrissy G., Penny L.C., and Kathy Jo P. The share IDs for the previous meeting, which was be yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, Thursday, June 7th, is 11514, 11,514. And then this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, Friday, June 8th, at 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, that share ID is 11516, 11,516. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Sherry K.B. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Sherry K.B.
Good morning, everybody. Sherry K.B. in Northern California. Very grateful to recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Sherry K.B. I will now ask Leslie M. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Leslie M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter How It Works. So we're on page 68, paragraph 4, which starts with Now About Sex. And we're going to read through 3 paragraphs, ending on page 69 with To Be Despised and Loathed. And we're going to make our comments on all 3 paragraphs. And I will ask Chrissy G. to open that discussion up by reading those paragraphs. Good morning, Chrissy.
Okay. Good morning. This is Chrissy G., recovered compulsive overeater and anorexic from New Jersey, soon to be New York. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible about this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here, we find human opinions run to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we justifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Again, I'm Chrissy G., and I listened to the earlier meeting, and it was amazing. Like, I can't say I don't ever enjoy a meeting, but especially when we're talking about this book. But it just is so healing, just I think as a community of people striving to live a spiritual life, to be able to talk about sex and just to talk about our feelings around intimacy and just the different things that came up during the first meeting. And I'm really curious to hear what comes up from this meeting. Just people's personal experiences with this topic that's been taboo, you know, even now in this day and age is taboo. It's not easy to talk to it. I know when I talk, I'm divorced and remarried, and when I talk to my partner, my new partner, about anything that's sex related, there's, you know, there could be awkwardness around it, you know, and it's like, if this program has taught me nothing, it's to be a good communicator about everything, to be you know, really spot on with my word, as honest as I can be without hurting another person. You know, and in as far as looking at my past conduct and what kind of selfishness there was, you know, I didn't understand my purpose in the world. I didn't see myself as being used as a tool by God to enrich someone else's life. You know, I didn't see my first marriage as God giving me a job to do to enrich this other person's life. I really, so selfishly, was thinking like a lot of people shared in the first part. And listen, it was justified by every Disney movie I ever saw, that his job was to make me happy. And then out of that abundance of happiness that I felt, I would give him in return, you know. And it's so different from the mature love that I feel now for my partner. And it's not about what I could get, but what I could give. And so in all my relationships, that needs to be a consideration. And I definitely need God's help for that. So I need the power of God that lives within me to really be the force behind that love, that kind of generous love. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Chrissy G. Again, we are on page 68 of the big book, How It Works is the chapter, paragraph 4, now about sex, reading through three paragraphs ending on 69, to be despised and loathe if you came in late. That's where we are this morning. The lines are now open for additional people to comment on those three paragraphs.
Lisa J.R.
Lisa J.R.
Marie J.
O.
Kathleen O, Marie J.
Greg B.
Virginia S.
Let's stop right there, please. Excellent. So I have Lisa J.R., Kristen R, that's what it is, okay. Kathleen O, Marie J, Greg B, and Virginia. Okay, good, thanks. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, moderator, and good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here. Lisa J.R., gratefully recovered just for today. Wow, this is, you know, once I got through my resentment form, I thought, well, this is going to be a piece of cake, the sex thing, because, you know, sex really isn't the driving force of my life. Boy, how wrong I was. You know, and it says here, you know, we tried to be sensible on this question, and we have to go about this sensibly. Otherwise, it becomes just an exercise in self-flagellation, you know, beating ourselves up, shame, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what it's meant to be. It's meant to set us free, and it did set me free. And I understood that, you know, it wasn't about the number of partners or any of that. It was about my selfishness, about what I found out was my fear. I thought I was this independent woman that didn't want to get tied down, that went about my life, you know, not harming anyone. And wow, did I see that the hundreds of people, that there was flirtation for validation in my life. If the person I was with did not validate me that way, did not compliment me when I looked nice, did not desire me. I looked for it elsewhere, and I didn't necessarily have affairs, but I had mental affairs. I had, you know, intrigue there, and I harmed people, and I harmed myself. So, this is something that we do to be free, just like the resentment form, that we have to really just take a look at our behavior here and what we do. And we can't change our behavior until we put it down, we acknowledge it and put it down. And that's what this exercise is all about. It's not to beat ourselves up. But the things that I saw, the most important thing I saw was the fear. I acted out in that independent manner because I was, at the bottom line, I found out I was afraid that nobody really would want to be with me in a long-term relationship. And once I got rid and saw that I was fearful and that my life was governed by fear, could I then move forward and be of maximum service to others and walk in the garden with my God and not hide in shame? And with that, I will pass. Thanks for everything.
Thanks so much, Lisa J.R. Kristen R., it's your turn.
Good morning, and thank you for your service and everybody who brought this meeting to fruition. My name is Kristen R. I'm a compulsive eater in Virginia. I hate these paragraphs. I hate them because I hate talking about sex. It makes me uncomfortable. It makes my skin want to come off. I just don't want to think about it. I don't want to talk about it. And I especially don't want to talk about it with anyone I care about. Because the truth is, sex for me is emotion. And God help me. I am out of control when it comes to my emotions. The last sentence of this reading talks about balance. And balancing out a sane sex life, a sane emotional life. Oh, how do I do that? How do we even begin? I wake up every morning with a head that is crazy, that tells me sell all the furniture in your living room. Fuck it. Just eat an apple pie. Who cares? Who cares? And you know what? The first thing I need to do is grab a pen, a piece of paper, and start writing out the steps. I admit I am powerless over all of my compulsions, not just eating, all of them. And my life is unmanageable, especially when I'm trying to manage it on my own without God. And then the second one, I came to believe in a power greater than myself. I have done so many horrible things around sex. I have hurt people. I have harmed people, and they didn't even know they were harmed. I harmed myself, primarily because it was always a secret, just like my emotions. Sex was always a secret for me. And when I finally realized what I was doing, the insanity of it, that's when I could finally, in my heart, get on my knees and say, I need you. I need you, God. I need you because I can't do this on myself. And I turned it all over to God. God, who will always love me, didn't need to forgive me because was never angry at me for all the mistakes I made, just wanted me to return. That's it. That's all I've got. I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kristen R. Now Kathleen O, and then Marie J will come after you, Kathleen.
Thank you so much, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. This is Kathleen O, compulsive overeater in Northern California. I guess I'll take a stab at this one. It's like, talk about sex. Oh, I think I'll just stay muted today. And, you know, these lines in here are very helpful. I wish I had found this when I was young. But, you know, we all have sex problems. Well, that's good news. We hardly would be human if we didn't. And we do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. And that was very helpful to me. It helped me kind of, you know, be honest about my sex conduct and this inventory when I did it. And, you know, the truth is, where had we been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? So where I had been dishonest was when men who were married gave me attention. I was dishonest I was selfish in that I liked the attention. And the attention felt really good. And dishonest, I would say, well, it's okay that I flirt back with this person because, you know, they're not in a good relationship. They're not happily married. Even the wife said she's not happily married. So I would justify my behavior. And you know, until I started doing these steps, I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. But when I started looking at who had I harmed, well, it didn't matter if, you know, people were going to get divorced anyway or they weren't in a good relationship. It wasn't for me to come in and, cause harm. It causes harm to the children. It causes harm to the family. It causes harm particularly to the other person. And so, you know, I had amends to make around this area. And thankfully, when I made them, the people I made them to were very gracious. And I just wish I had, you know, it's kind of like I shouldn't worry about what happened in the past or try to change what happened in the past. It was all, you know, a learning experience and part of my life. But I tell you, if I knew then what I know now, I would have done things so much differently. And the good news is, moving forward, I have had people, flirt. And you know, I love flirting. I always loved flirting. I don't do it anymore. And my life is so much better not doing it. And when it comes to, you know, even friends who are married, if, we're in a group and someone's trying to flirt, I cut it off right away. And I guess I could talk about this a long time. Thank you, Melanie. And I pass.
Thank you, Kathleen O. Marie J., you're up next, and then Greg will come after you.
Thanks, Mel. Can you hear me?
I can.
Great. Thank you. This is Marie J., recovered in Colorado. Boy, I have such discomfort with this paragraph because it's one that I need so much. And this was a really hard one for me for years. And this is really about looking at my conduct around being available versus withdrawn in my relationship with my husband. And I found that I put tons and tons of effort and time in my program with sponsorship and outreach. And it was all kind of at the expense of my relationship to my husband, because program is a really safe place for me to be emotionally connected. And it'd be really frightening and vulnerable for me to be vulnerable with my husband. And my husband and I are talking a lot about this lately, because I've been able to own my own part, and I've been working with God on this for a long time, but I never saw this as my problem. It was always my husband was not emotionally available, and that's a lie. It's a lie that I believed, because I had expectations and judgment and blame around his conduct. And until I got to a place where I could see where I had been unavailable, I had been withdrawn, I had been shut down, and I was a victim. And until I got to the place where I could say to myself, ooh, if I'm not the problem, then there's no solution, I was unable to surrender and to allow God to lead me until I could see my part. And I had expectations of him to be something that I myself was unwilling to be, because I was too afraid to be vulnerable and emotionally connected. And I was filling it with relationships where it is safe, like in program. And for the last year, I've had a relationship, maybe longer than that, a relationship ideal that I've been reading out loud and not really believing that it could ever happen, but I do have faith in God that anything can happen with God. And so I just trusted that keep reading this, keep having this intention. And behold, you know, it's happening to me. And it's happened in God's time, and only with my willingness to examine myself and to look at how the things I blame him for are the things that actually I'm unwilling or unable to do because of fear and because of not trusting. So I really highly recommend a sex ideal. It took me a long time to get one and be willing to have one, and then discomfort through reading it and going, oh, I'm never gonna show up like this in my relationship. And now I am, and he is, and it's really quite the miracle. Thanks. I pass.
Thank you, Marie J. Greg B., you're next, and then Virginia will come after you.
Hey, thanks, Mel. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Oh, my friend Tom M. here in the Bay Area says, I'm Greg B., compulsive eater, recovered in California, Northern California. My friend Tom M. says, it's hilarious. He says, I woke up this morning feeling pretty good. Then I started thinking. And that's the problem. It's the thinking. My thinking around this topic is, you know, I just think about this and what does this person think about me? And I want to be a people pleaser. What I learned and have to learn again and again and again in years in program is my thinking is distorted. If I'm thinking, well, me and God are going to pray about this and God told me this and God told me that, it's really important for me to then go through the process of the steps to get a sponsor or an advisor involved. I need to test these theories that I've come up with God because, you know, I need to make amends to every girl that or every, you know, person I was in a relationship with that I hurt. That's a little half-cocked, you know. I might think that God's telling me that because I want to be rigorously honest and, you know, cash register honest. And then in reality, talk to a sponsor, you know, it's not really necessary, you know. You don't need to go back and dig up all those. You're going to hurt and create more damage. My higher power has brought me in touch with people in the past who I thought I would never see again that I was able to make amends to. Or those sex conduct things, you know, specific sex conduct things, relationships that I torched. Problem is, when I came in program, I was incapable of having a relationship. And so relationships are a bonus that I never had before program. And then I did it wrong a lot of ways. So I have a lot of amends to make. And certainly to my wife. And, you know, there's a lot of relationship there, you know, for various things, not just specifically, you know, sexual acts or anything like that. It's more about, you know, not being available or manipulation of other people. People talked about a lot of great things today and things I can identify with. But it's important to, you know, that the action I need to take is not, you know, just running off and doing stuff. The action I need to take is to consult with somebody in program and get, you know, some good advice before I, you know, leap into a whole bunch of stuff that might cause more damage. Being the tornado that I am. But I love this meeting, and I love reading this these pages, and thank you all. I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg B. And just before Virginia steps up here, I want to remind everybody that we are on page 68 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, chapter How It Works. The paragraph 4, now about sex, reading through 3 paragraphs today, ending on 69 with to be despised and loathed. Virginia, you're next. If you'd give me the first initial of your last name, that would be good. Thanks. And then we're going to open up the lines again. Star 1, Virginia. That will unmute you.
Hi, this is Virginia.
Hi, you got here. Great.
Oh,
would you give me the first initial of your last name real quick before you, while you
sure,
take a breath?
Virginia S., and I'm the Northeast Virginia S. There's a Midwest Virginia S. as well.
Oh, thanks. Okay, thank you. It's your turn. You got a full 3.
Okay, so thanks for everyone for letting me share. I just finished up my 4th and 5th step and getting almost through now the 6th step, and you know, my first name, Virginia, apparently means pure, and my middle name also means pure. I was raised in an Italian, Catholic, Irish family. And sex was not, that was like not a thing that I was ever supposed to do with older brothers and, you know, a mom who had some significant, you know, history around sexual abuse. And because of that, I was a late bloomer. But so when I would read this chapter, I thought it was written for other people. But I made up for it in my time now being newly divorced. I've certainly acted out in a lot of ways. And I can't imagine there are people that I know I cannot apologize to because it's too dangerous. But I can, one of the things that came up in my mind is just, you know, around my kids, especially I have a boy who's 10 years old, to dress appropriately and to not be showing cleavage and, you know, to respect my son in that way. That's something that I really need to do for him because he's very uncomfortable with that. And so, you know, when I was, I didn't think I had any problems here. And that's usually a red flag for me. Whenever I think, oh, this is for other people, that means that, no, come back. You know, this is exactly what you need to hear. And for whatever reason at that moment, my, I guess the self-protection or disease, which is not protective, is telling me to look away. I feel like I'm at a point where I can look at some of this. It's hard, though, but I want to look at it because this has all branched into a kind of a new chapter for me on love addiction. And the door is just opening up, and the windows are flying open about awareness around this. So I do know that this is a core addiction for me, and it is very, very similar to the binging, purging cycle for me. So what I saw myself and I have awareness with more recently in the last 6 months is that sex was like felt like I was biting the bad apple. And so anyway, I just wanted to say that I understand that this is also a huge addiction, which I never realized before, that I go somewhere else whenever it's happening. So anyway, so I'm grateful for this chapter, and it definitely applies. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Virginia S. We are studying on page 68, paragraph 4, reading through three paragraphs about some information on the sex inventory and some instructions on how to do so. I have, looks like time for more people to comment on those paragraphs. Who would like to?
Eileen S.
Eileen S., is that what I heard?
Yes.
Okay, and then Elaine B.
Polly G.
Thanks. Polly B.
Bonnie D.
Bonnie D.
Hi, Mary Lou in California.
Mary Lou. Let's take one more of that. Jordan L.
Shani D.
Thanks so much. Let's go with that. Hey, Shani, I'll put you down and we'll see what happens. So this is the lineup.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I got Elaine S., Elaine B., Polly B., Bonnie D., Mary Lou M., Jordan L., and then Shoshani, if we have time for that. So, good morning, Eileen. Did I say Elaine twice? Eileen.
Yes. Thank you. This is Eileen S. in Portland, Oregon. Thank you so much, everybody, for your shares. Yesterday, I remembered noticing, wow, the next one is on sex. And, ooh, we're going to talk about sex. And I wondered how that was going to be. And I just want to say how grateful I am for all the honest shares that came before me. I don't even know what I need and want to say. I just knew that I needed to speak up about it because sex has been such a tough subject for me. I want it and I'm afraid of it. And I always felt like I didn't have enough and I'm not done yet. And I did recently do a fourth and fifth step and I'm making amends. And I did look at this, and I have made amends before in another inventory. My own discomfort that there's been a lot of selfishness for me, like you're supposed to do it for me and, doing it for someone else just so they could do it for me, and struggling with many issues involved in that, really the fear of intimacy, the fear of letting go. That's been really a tough one for me, and I'm speaking honestly as I can to break shame cycles that I've had. When I read in here, everybody has sex problems, we wouldn't be human if we didn't, that was really reassuring to me. Like, oh, I thought everybody had it together. I remember when I wasn't married, and I'm divorced now, but when I wasn't married, I thought everybody who was married had sex all the time because you can. I thought that. And anytime I ever talked to somebody who was married, they used to laugh. And then I got married and we didn't have it all the time. And there were issues and we both had issues. And I had a tendency to focus on my husband at the time's issues and didn't really want to look at my own. And I did, but it was really hard. And so, you know, I love hearing about having an ideal. I need God to guide me in this department because I didn't do a real great job of it. And I just, I'm working on my ninth step right now. And anyway, I don't know where this is going to take me. I just know that I need God to guide me in this department as well as all others. And anyway, I appreciate everybody's honesty and openness with this. It was quite touching. And I don't know. I just really appreciate all of you. And I'm grateful to be on the line. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen S. Elaine B., you're next. And then Polly will come after you. Star one to be heard.
Thank you very much, Melanie, and thank you for your service, and thank you, God, for this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells me what to do with things like my sex conduct. You know, I am an ease and comfort addict, and a lot of my sex conduct had to do with my ease and my comfort, and I have difficulty in relationships, and sometimes my difficulty in relationships made it a lot easier to make out with somebody than to talk with them. And yet my selfishness, my self-seeking, my motives is always to get something from them, you know, because I had low self-esteem, I was insecure, and I thought if you loved me, then I can love me. You know, so then I got to keep all the balls in the air so that you will love me. And the more people that loved me, quote unquote, you know, the more loved I was. But then what I realized is that that really wasn't the love I was looking for. And when I finally got engaged, I took out, you know, in the old days, they had a hope chest and you know, where they put their quilts and their fancy things and their little, you know, tea set and stuff like that, that they would have when they took when they got married and started their own home. And I took out my hope chest. And what was in it? Well, there was a plumber's uniform and the driver's uniform and the accountant uniform and the provider uniform and the sweep me off my feet guy uniform. And I tried to put them all on my husband because it was still all about me. It wasn't even about the sex act. It was this relationship, this dynamic. You're here to feed me. So I pulled out all my romantic expectations and all the love songs I've heard and all the movies I've watched that brought me to tears over how he oohed and aahed over her, and set that expectation on my husband, who quickly rejected all of them. And, you know, we built a relationship that wasn't built on the fantasy I was trying to fulfill in my mind with other people. And it's interesting because when I had my relapse, it wasn't just the food that was lighting up for me. It was all those things I went to for ease and comfort, including, you know, a man that I saw at church, but I also saw at, you know, I took some AA meetings and 90 meetings in 90 days. And fortunately, and there was a guy there and he was getting my attention. I'm a married woman, you know, and this isn't okay. So I'm so grateful I found these steps because I got to look at how inconsiderate, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking I was, what my motives were, and to come up with a sex ideal. And, you know, the other thing I like is I don't want to be the arbiter of anybody's sex conduct or their food plan or their higher power. That's the best way for me to work as a sponsor and in this program. And so with that, I pass. Thanks again, Melanie.
Thank you, Elaine B. Polly B., you're next. And then Bonnie D. will come after Polly.
Hi, Melanie. Hello, everyone. Thank you for your service, for all the shares. I'll probably be grateful to be a recovered
compulsive eater in North Carolina on a beautiful day. And I love talking about sex. And what's really interesting is that yesterday, so the second time around with the same guy, we read these exact pages. And I'm really looking forward to doing a more deeper inventory this time around. And no pun intended, but anyway, sex was just the perfect drug back when I discovered it. And it may have saved my life because I wasn't tempted to use hard drugs. And it worked a lot better than food. It was quicker, unlimited availability that I didn't have to pay for was cash. It burned calories, and I read the books, which told you how many calories were burned with different sorts of sex. And it was an appetite suppressant. So I hid behind that for decades with a perfectly normal-sized body and really completely oblivious to how I was victimizing people in a way that I couldn't see and they couldn't see. I manipulated them using sex. I had been a victim. I became a victimizer. I didn't lock anyone up or tie them up, but I did it with a combination of emotional blackmail and physical blackmail. And I just can't wait to get as thorough, to be as thorough, now that I'm recovered of compulsive overeating and food behaviors, because I do know that I have a higher power now. I do know that the light is shining, and I do know that I can be recovered as a total person. It's not just about the food or the body, or it's life, living a spiritual life. And so I may need to go to a temple and meditate for a while before this comes to me, but I am looking forward to being relieved of this part of my overall scarcity, emptiness, and to be honest and sharp. Thank you. I'll pass with that. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you, Polly B. Bonnie D., you're next. And then Mary Lou M., you'll come after Bonnie. Bonnie, a quick press of the star key, star one, will get you heard.
Okay, great. This is Bonnie D. in Ventura, California. Can you hear
me?
Good
morning.
Thank you. And thank you for the food for thought from those who have gone before. This is a difficult subject, and this is my first time sharing. Wow. On page 68, it says, here we find opinions running to extreme, absurd extremes, perhaps. We want to stay out of this controversy. We will be looking for a sane and sound ideal for our future. For me, this reinforces the ideal of being neutral, not just about food. Even though this subject is extremely challenging for me, also, there is sanity and an ideal in looking at my part. For me, it's helpful that we have previously emphasized the power of God in the above paragraphs. There is a fear addressing this subject regarding my sex actions and selfish thoughts. There are always things I could have done better, but continuing to accept or shovel blame onto others is a problem that God's power is big enough to clear up. If there is not a problem regarding my action, there can be a part I could improve. There's baggage of the past that is coloring my attitudes, and I'm not then open to the sunlight of the Spirit. So I ask God to mold my ideals and help me live up to them, as it suggests. If I did not act selfishly, was I a victim? Perhaps on my part, I can look at my past actions. I can admit what was long hidden. As a child, I was a victim. Did I speak up? How can I review the shame? This is where I need God's love. And my faith allows me to trust Him. God is love, and He knows every part of my heart. I appreciate the 12 steps and fellows who are learning to speak our truth with God leading the way. Putting the food down, these feelings come up, and I appreciate and realize that taking the time cleaning up the wreckage of the past, I will be empowered to love others as God intended. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Bonnie D. Mary Lou M., you're next, and then Jordan L. Looks like we have about 2.5 minutes to share between the two of you. Good morning, Mary Lou.
Hi, Melanie. How much time?
About 2.5, it looks like.
Oh, okay. This is Mary Lou in California. And it's been such a good meeting this morning. This reading in particular about sex has really touched me. I like on page 69, kind of I think ahead of where it talks about we reviewed our own conduct. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. And that's what I get here is, you know, I have also come from sexual abuse in my past and gone through therapy for that and some ACA, a lot of ACA work lately, very helpful. And also in my relationships with men just and with sexuality, it's gotten a lot of healing because I've looked for help in outside sources to help heal that dysfunction around touch and sexuality and to expand my ideals and not my ideals, but my safe sense of safety and pleasure and longing and how to heal it. And it's very much healable once the intellectual aspect is recognized through this cognizant work in the big book, the doing the actual work, and then living it out with the real flesh and blood man, partner. And I know the sex ideals as far as, for me now, as a woman in recovery from food addiction and compulsive eating, just having the morality and ethics that the big book is asking me to look at where have I been selfish, dishonest in this area? Where have I caused harm? Where have I aroused jealousy? You know, do I dress provocatively? Do I look at married men? If I do, I don't look at married men. I'm not a saint, but I want to be one. I want to be a saint. I want to be wholesome. And then there's this positive view of sexuality, which I love in here, which I have now through a lot of work with outside help. There's sex therapists, somatic sexual healing therapist, and I kind of wanted to be one. At one point, I wanted to be a sex therapist because I really see that passion and pleasure is an okay thing within a morality, realm of, for me, monogamy, I believe in. So anyway, this is an enjoyable conversation, and I really like it, and I like my body, and I like sexuality, and it took a lot of grief, pain, and work to get here. So I'm just grateful for the hope. Thanks. Mary Lou, California. Hello?
Ah, that was me being silent.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mary Lou M. Appreciate that. And Jordan L., you'll be our last share today, and you have 2.5 minutes, too. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Mel. Can you hear me?
I can.
My name's Jordan L. I'm a compulsive overeater in Colorado. Super grateful to be live this morning because I haven't been able to tune in live all week. So glad I was able to get up early enough this morning. I think similar to like some other people have already shared, I was pretty sure that I was good in this department, at least this time around in this last inventory that I did. I've been in a long-term relationship for a couple of years now with a really great guy. You know, he's like one of those guys that when I first met him, and still now, again, it's kind of coming back around. He's like one of those guys that inspires me to be the best me I can be, you know? And so that's pretty cool. But I wasn't really sure how this applied, until I was listening. I listened to Joe and Charlie as I was doing my inventory this time around, and they pointed out that line, like, our sex powers are God given, you know? So our God given sex powers have like two sort of purposes, right? One's procreation and the other's pleasure. And if I'm using these six powers for anything else besides those two sort of purposes, then I'm using them outside of that God-given purpose, you know? And what I found in this long-term relationship when I really looked at my conduct was that I was using for outside of that pleasure purpose. Like, I was using it in this long-term relationship for manipulation, you know? And I used to get really mad at Nathan and say that he was like, you know, he didn't want to be intimate and he didn't want to be romantic, and why didn't he want to be those things? And, you know, it must be a reflection of me, and I'd get on like my self-pity pod and this and that. I'll go ahead and wrap up. And like, the fact of the matter was, if I'm using my God-given sex powers for manipulation, then I'm the one preventing that relationship from being intimate and romantic. Like, there's no room for anything else in there except for my control, you know? So anyway, I just wanted to share that, and thanks for being here this morning, guys. Yeah, recovery. That's it.
Thanks, Jordan L. That will wrap up the sharing part of our meeting and the recorded part of our meeting as we transition into the last 10 minutes. We'll close this one up. So thank you to everyone that did share this morning. And we will pass this over to Penny L.C. to read page 164 from the big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only, and then we'll close it out with a serenity prayer. Hi, Penny.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you for your service. I'm Penny, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.